Upon their arrival in North America, Amos and Danny had published a flurry of papers together. Mostly, it was stuff they'd had in the works when they'd left Israel. But in the early 1980s, what they wrote together was not done in the same way as before. Amos wrote a piece on loss aversion under both their names, to which Danny added a few stray paragraphs. Danny wrote up on his own what Amos had called the Undoing Project, titled it The Simulation Heuristic, and published it with both their names on top in a book that collected their articles, along with others by students and colleagues, and then set out to explore the rules of the imagination not with Amos, but with his younger colleague at the University of British Columbia, Dale Miller. Amos wrote an article addressed directly to economists to repair technical flaws in prospect theory. Advances in Prospect Theory, it was called, and though Amos did much of the work on it with his graduate student Rich Gonzalez, it ran as a journal article by Danny and Amos. Amos said that it had always been Kahneman and Tversky, and that this had to be Kahneman and Tversky, and that it would be really strange to add a third person to it, said Gonzalez. Thus, they maintained the illusion that they were still working together, much as before, even as the forces pulling them apart gathered strength. The growing crowd of common enemies failed to unite them. Danny was increasingly uneasy with the attitude Amos took toward their opponents. Amos was built to fight. Danny was built to survive. He shied from conflict. Now that their work was under attack, Danny adopted a new policy, to never review a paper that made him angry. It served as an excuse to ignore any act of hostility. Amos accused Danny of identifying with the enemy, and he wasn't far off. Danny almost found it easier to imagine himself in his opponent's shoes than in his own. In some strange way, Danny contained within himself his own opponent. He didn't need another. Amos, to be Amos, needed opposition. Without it, he had nothing to triumph over. And Amos, like his homeland, lived in a state of readiness for battle. Amos didn't have Danny's feeling that we should all think together and work together, said Walter Mischel, who had been the chair of Stanford's psychology department when it hired Amos. He thought, fuck you. That sentiment must have been passing through Amos's mind in the early 1980s even more often than it usually did. The critics publishing attacks on his work with Danny were the least of it. At conferences and in conversations, Amos heard over and over from economists and decision theorists that he and Danny had exaggerated human fallibility, or that the kinks in the mind that they had observed were artificial, or only present in the minds of college undergraduates, or something. A lot of people with whom Amos interacted had big investments in the idea that people were rational. Amos was perplexed by their inability to admit defeat in an argument he had plainly won. Amos wanted to crush the opposition, said Danny. It just got under his skin more than it did mine. He wanted to find something to shut people up, which, of course, you can never do. Toward the end of 1980, or maybe it was early 1981, Amos came to Danny with a plan to write an article that would end the discussion. Their opponents might never admit defeat, intellectuals seldom did, but they might at least decide to change the subject. Winning by embarrassment, Amos called it. Amos wanted to demonstrate the raw power of the mind's rules of thumb to mislead. He and Danny had stumbled upon some bizarre phenomena back in Israel and never fully explored their implications. Now they did. As ever, they crafted careful vignettes to reveal the inner workings of the minds of the people they asked to judge them. Amos's favorite was about Linda. Linda is 31 years old, single, outspoken, and very bright. She majored in philosophy. As a student, she was deeply concerned with issues of discrimination and social justice, and also participated in anti-nuclear demonstrations. Linda was designed to be the stereotype of a feminist. Danny and Amos asked, "To what degree does Linda resemble the typical member of each of the following classes?" 1. Linda is a teacher in elementary school. 2. Linda works in a bookstore and takes yoga classes. 3. Linda is active in the feminist movement. 4. Linda is a psychiatric social worker. 5. Linda is a member of the League of Women Voters. 6. Linda is a bank teller. 7. Linda is an insurance salesperson. 8. Linda is a bank teller and is active in the feminist movement. Danny passed out the Linda vignette to students at the University of British Columbia. In this first experiment, two different groups of students were given four of the eight descriptions and asked to judge the odds that they were true. One of the groups had Linda is a bank teller on its list. The other got Linda is a bank teller and is active in the feminist movement. Those were the only two descriptions that mattered, though of course the students didn't know that. The group given Linda is a bank teller and is active in the feminist movement judged it more likely than the group assigned Linda is a bank teller. That result was all that Danny and Amos needed to make their big point. The rules of thumb people use to evaluate probability led to misjudgments. Linda is a bank teller and is active in the feminist movement could never be more probable than Linda is a bank teller. Linda is a bank teller and active in the feminist movement was just a special case of Linda is a bank teller. Linda is a bank teller included Linda is a bank teller and activist in the feminist movement, along with Linda is a bank teller and likes to walk naked through Serbian forests and all other bank-telling Lindas. One description was entirely contained by the other. People were blind to logic when it was embedded in a story. Describe a very sick old man and ask people, which is more probable, that he will die within a week or die within a year? More often than not, they will say he'll die within a week. Their mind latches onto a story of imminent death, and the story masks the logic of the situation. Amos created a lovely example. He asked people, which is more likely to happen in the next year, that 1,000 Americans will die in a flood, or that an earthquake in California will trigger a massive flood that will drown 1,000 Americans? People went with the earthquake. The force that led human judgment astray in this case was what Danny and Amos had called representativeness, or the similarity between whatever people were judging and some model they had in their mind of that thing. The minds of the students in the first Linda experiment, latching on to the description of Linda and matching its details to their mental model of feminist, judged the special case to be more likely than the general one. Amos wasn't satisfied with stopping there. He wanted to hand the entire list of Lindas to groups of people and have them rank the odds of each line item. He wanted to see if a person who decided that Linda is a bank teller activist in the feminist movement also thought it was more probable than Linda is a bank teller. He wanted to show people making that glaring mistake. Amos really loved to do that, said Danny. To win the argument, you want people to actually make mistakes. Danny was of two minds about this new project and about Amos. From the moment they had left Israel, they'd been like a pair of swimmers caught in different currents, losing the energy to swim against them. Amos felt the pull of logic, Danny the tug of psychology. Danny wasn't nearly as interested as Amos in demonstrations of human irrationality. His interest in decision theory ended with the psychological insight he brought to it. There is an underlying debate, said Danny later. Are we doing psychology or decision theory? Danny wanted to return to psychology. Plus, Danny didn't believe that people would actually make this particular mistake. Seeing the descriptions side by side, they'd realized that it was illogical to say that anyone was more likely to be a bank teller active in the feminist movement than simply a bank teller. With something of a heavy heart, Danny put what would come to be known as the Linda problem to a class of a dozen students at the University of British Columbia. 12 out of 12 fell for it, he said. I remember I gasped. Then I called Amos from my secretary's phone. They ran many further experiments with different vignettes on hundreds of subjects. We just wanted to look at the boundaries of the phenomenon, said Danny. To explore those boundaries, they finally shoved their subjects' noses right up against logic. They gave subjects the same description of Linda and asked simply, which of the two alternatives is more probable? Linda is a bank teller. Linda is a bank teller and is active in the feminist movement. 85% still insisted that Linda was more likely to be a bank teller in the feminist movement than she was to be a bank teller. The Linda problem resembled a Venn diagram of two circles, but with one of the circles wholly contained by the other. But people didn't see the circles. Danny was actually stunned. At every step, we thought, now that's not going to work, he said, and whatever was going on inside people's minds was terrifyingly stubborn. Danny gathered an auditorium full of UBC students and explained their mistake to them. Do you realize you have violated a fundamental rule of logic, he asked. So what? A young woman shouted from the back of the room. You just asked for my opinion. They put the Linda problem in different ways to make sure that the students who served as their lab rats weren't misreading its first line as saying, "Linda is a bank teller, not active in the feminist movement." They put it to graduate students with training in logic and statistics. They put it to doctors in a complicated medical story in which lay embedded the opportunity to make a fatal error of logic. In overwhelming numbers, doctors made the same mistake as undergraduates. "Most participants appeared surprised and dismayed to have made an elementary error of reasoning," wrote Amos and Danny. "Because the conjunction fallacy is easy to expose, people who committed it are left with the feeling that they should have known better." The paper Amos and Danny set out to write about what they were now calling the conjunction fallacy must have felt to Amos like an argument ender. That is, if the argument was about whether the human mind reasoned probabilistically, instead of the ways that Danny and Amos had suggested. They walked the reader through how and why people violated perhaps the simplest and the most basic qualitative law of probability. They explained that people chose the more detailed description, even though it was less probable, because it was more representative. They pointed out some places in the real world where this kink in the mind might have serious consequences. Any prediction, for instance, could be made to seem more believable, even as it became less likely, if it was filled with internally consistent details. And any lawyer could at once make a case seem more persuasive, even as he made the truth of it less likely, by adding representative details to his description of people and events. And they showed all over again the power of the mental rules of thumb, these curious forces that they had curiously named heuristics. To the Linda problem, Danny and Amos added another, from work they had done in the early 1970s in Jerusalem. In 4 pages of a novel, about 2,000 words, how many words would you expect to find that have the form blank, 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 ing, 7-letter words that end with ing? Indicate your best estimate by circling one of the values below, 0, 1 to 2, 3 to 4, 5 to 7, 8 to 10, 11 to 15, or 16 plus. Then they put to those same people a second question. How many 7-letter words appeared in that same text of the form blank, 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 n, blank? Of course, there had to be at least as many 7-letter words with n in the 6th position as there were 7-letter words ending in ing, as the latter was just one example of the former. People didn't realize that, however. They guessed, on average, that the 2,000-word text contained 13.4 words ending in ing and only 4.7 words with n in the 6th position. And they did this, Amos and Danny argued, because it was easier to think of words ending in ing. Those words were more available. People's misjudgment of the problem was simply the availability heuristic in action. The paper was another hit. The Linda problem and the conjunction fallacy entered the language. Danny had misgivings, however. The new work was jointly written, but it was, he said, joint and painful. He no longer had the feeling that he and Amos were sharing a mind. Amos had written 2 entire pages of it by himself, in which he sought to define, with greater precision, representativeness. Danny had wanted to keep the definition vague. Danny was uneasy with the feeling that the paper was less an exploration of a new phenomenon than the forging of a new weapon to be used by Amos in battle. "It's very Amos," he said. "It's a combative paper. We'll provoke you with this, and we'll show you that you can't win this argument." By then, their interactions had become fraught. It had taken Danny the longest time to understand his own value. Now he could see that the work Amos had done alone was not as good as the work they had done together. The joint work always attracted more interest and higher praise than anything Amos had done alone. It had apparently attracted this genius award, and yet the public perception of their relationship was now a Venn diagram, 2 circles, with Danny wholly contained by Amos. The rapid expansion of Amos's circle pushed his borders further and further away from Danny's. Danny felt himself sliding slowly but surely from the small group Amos loved to the large group whose ideas Amos viewed with contempt. "Amos changed," said Danny. "When I gave him an idea, he would look for what was good in it, for what was right with it. That, for me, was the happiness in the collaboration. He understood me better than I understood myself. He stopped doing that." To those close to Amos who glimpsed his interaction with Danny, The wonder wasn't that he and Danny were falling out, but that they had ever fallen in. "Danny isn't so easy to access," said Percy Diaconis. Amos was all out there. The chemistry was so deep, I don't know if it's describable in a mechanistic way. Each of them was brilliant, and that they did interact and that they could interact was a miracle. The miracle did not look as if it was going to survive its removal from the Holy Land.